You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Well, I told my wife, this is my wife Pam, by the way, back here, and I told her, I said, we won't have a big crowd for this. I don't think a lot of people know what I'm talking about. Seriously, because gerontology is one of my specialties. Now, granted, I did my work in 1985-86, so there's been a lot of change since then, but I've reasonably well tried to keep up along the way. But about 3 years ago, I guess it was, I had dinner with Johnny Erickson one night at the Biblical Counseling Coalition, and she asked me about the book because she had seen it years before. I said, yeah, I'm in the process of revising it. She said, well, you need to add a chapter on disabilities and aging. I said, okay, that's a good suggestion. So I went back and did the research to do that and add it to the book. And in the process, I came upon a number of things about robotics. And all I had, my mind on that had all just going back to the earlier years when the Japanese were developing robotics, but it was mostly about getting people out of bed, that kind of thing. But they were developing it for the same reason we're developing this stuff today, is their aging population was way outstripping the caregivers. And so they were really developing it back then. But then I got into this and I thought, okay, I'm going to add another chapter on this subject because it's not something people are familiar with. So we don't have a big crowd. I'm not surprised because most people are not even aware this is going on. But we need to be aware of it, as you'll see as we're thinking this through. We need to be aware of it. Let me open this in prayer. Father, we're grateful for your love and your mercy to us. We're grateful for a long life. But Lord, sometimes that long life brings some great difficulties with it that in your providence you allow. And Father, then there are the rest who needs to help care for us, along with the dignity of the image of God in us. And so Lord, make this time worthwhile for your glory, we pray in Jesus' name, amen. And this fits really well in the theme of this conference, in the image of God. Because when you get down to where I am, I'll be 84 my next birthday. So when you get down where I am, you become useless sooner or later. And when you're not useful in this culture, you have no longer dignity. So I decided I'm going to stay active as long as I can and retain the dignity. No, that's not true, but but I do stay very active. God's blessed me with reasonably good health. They rebuilt my heart, or my vascular system back in when I was 66 and did a quad bypass. And God's blessed and just been able to get up and go and keep on going. So people say, why do you do what you do? I say, well, God's invested a lot in me, and it doesn't make good stewardship to set on a shelf. But the other one is, I'm having holy fun. So, this gal back here was one of my supervisees when she did her ACBC certification on the other end of the country. I'm in Birmingham, and she's in New Mexico. That's one of the joys of this thing, these things today. You can do those kind of things. So ethics in robotics and aging. Is not wisdom found among the aged? Does not long life bring understanding? And the implied answer is yes. 2 Timothy 4:7-8, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Implied, hear my wisdom. I'm going to start with a quiz. Don't you love that? I teach Marrington Family Class. And I walk in the first night, I walk through the syllabus with my students, and I say, okay, put everything away, get a clean sheet of paper. I'm going to give you a quiz. And it's that one is a one-question quiz. This one's going to have a few questions. That one's a one-question quiz. I just ask them, what is the most common marriage problem? And if I've got 20 students, three of them will get it right. What do you think the most popular answer to that quiz is?
Communication.
And I said, no, that sounds good, because it's very common. But actually, it's a symptom, it's not the problem. There are other things underneath that drive the poor communication. Yeah. But the chief marriage problem is selfishness. It's all about me. Okay. So here's the quiz. Who is Asneel? Who is Denzel? Who is Eliku? Who is Myro? Oh, you never met these folks? Well, we'll meet them today. Okay? Getting acquainted with robotics and aging and situational realities. You're not alone if you didn't recognize our quiz friends. Approximately 65% of Americans are unfamiliar with robotics and caring for the aging, let alone knowledgeable of our friends. So, general populace is not very aware of these assist for the aging caring process. How is it as a nation we are so unaware? Well, it was not until the baby boomers were upon us that we as a nation took seriously aging as a social problem. Centers for Aging at various universities didn't begin until 1955. 1985, the University of Georgia established its center, and it was only the third in the nation. And I happened to be in that first class when they opened that center. That was the year I was at Georgia. Always got tickled. The head of that department was from the other one that preceded us, and that was Harvard and Boston U together established that one. And it was led by a 6'2" Chinese fellow. His name was Leonard Poon. Really an interesting gentleman. The expected growth of the older adult population in the U.S. over the next 50 years, this was written in 2006, will have an unprecedented impact on the U.S. healthcare system, especially in terms of supply and demand for healthcare workers. Not so much the healthcare, but the workers. The supply of healthcare workers may decrease as this aging population takes place and a large number retire and or reduce their working hours. At the same time, older adults consume a disproportionately large share of American healthcare services. So the demand for healthcare services will grow. The aging population will also affect the nature of the skills and the services of healthcare workforce, and it must be equipped to provide in the settings in which this care can be provided. In other words, short circuit that. The wave is upon us in terms of the aging wave, and the age is upon us in terms of the diminished capacity to care for them. That's really what all that's saying. I have a couple of friends who are travel nurses. If you want to put somebody in a young and a good career, and they don't mind travel, that's the place to go. Man, they make the big bucks and they make it fast. Why? Because there aren't enough nurses. Major ethical considerations gave rise to these options. Robotics or euthanasia? On the left side, you have economic strains, you have shortage of workers, What's the solution? Robotics. Less personal care, but you can still get them cared for. On the other side, economic strains, shortage of workers, solution. Euthanasia. Eliminate the problem. And if you don't think that's true, just do a little research on the increasing number and approval for and number of assisted suicide among the aging. And don't be surprised. I say European because they're really ahead of us on the bad side of these things. Don't be surprised if you start hearing where it's mandated under certain circumstances. I will not be surprised at all if that comes to pass. Turning our attention to ethical concerns in the use of robotics, even in the general populace, some experts in the field opinion that robotics will make older adults more independent, hence functionally and ethically justified. So on a very practical level, it's going to enhance their abilities that they grow older to keep going and keep doing. Therefore, on a very practical level, it's ethically justified to use robotics. Others fear they will contribute to isolation and abandonment, resulting in unethical ignoring of responsibility by caregivers and relatives. That's pragmatism. How many of you have visited a government-sponsored nursing home anytime in the last year or two? I don't know about yours, but the one I used to go to was not a very pleasant place to go. I remember going there, and we had a gal in our church at that point was there, and this is 20 years ago or more. You walk in that door, and you would see person after person sitting in a wheelchair, strapped in the wheelchair, drooling out the side of their mouth, totally unattended. The only attention they got was get them out of bed, put them in the wheelchair, strap them in, and push them out in the lobby. That was it. That's where they stayed until somebody maybe fed them lunch and maybe didn't. Maybe just fed them supper. That's not very ethical care either, is it? Others fear they will contribute to isolation. So some people go down on this side, but the idea is some have ethical issues either way. So we have to think our way through this. Either way, we've got to think our way through it. Yet others express concerns that elderly will form human attachments to the robots, contributing to detachment from reality, and I would add, and replacing God. An unhealthy and unspiritual condition. Three developing categories of robotics and aging: emotional, cognitive, and behavioral. That really shouldn't be surprised, because when you're counseling people, what are you dealing with? Emotional, cognitive, behavioral. Well, you're going to say, well, yeah, the spiritual. Yeah, we know the spiritual underlies it, but I'm just saying, on a human level, it's emotional, cognitive, and behavioral. So it shouldn't surprise us that robotics is being developed that caters to one or the other, and sometimes across the board, multiple. Now, next door, Bill Slattery is dealing with church discipline and counseling. I just saw they're dragging in extra chairs. Behavioral and mechanical, most developed. Here's where the Japanese shown a long time ago already. They were really good at developing the behavioral mechanical to assist with helping aging people. Assisting those with skeletal weakness and with movement overall. And what is particularly fascinating is that the family members can control the robot through a smartphone interface. Robotics can also use teleoperation systems utilizing force feedback devices tried and proven on the International Space Station to engage nursing assistants. So this technology is being adapted from some of the technology that we developed to work on the space stations. That's where it comes from. Consider the possible ethical issues here. Again, isolation, disconnecting the emotional connection, soul on soul, and avoiding touching in the assistance process. I was talking to somebody the other day. I did not hear this one personally. I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and they told me of a secularist who you never heard of. He's dead now. Well, maybe he's not. Maybe he's just ancient by now. Anyway, he was a psychiatrist. When he was in training, which would have made it back in the 50s, when he was in training, he did an internship at a hospital where there were a lot of aging people, and basically they just warehoused them there, made sure they got cleaned up and fed them, but basically they were warehoused. And he questioned why that was allowed. Didn't seem human to him. And they said, well, they don't know the difference anyway. They're cognitively gone. They're physical bodies, that's it. He said, I don't think so. He said, let me get some of my fellow students and let me do an experiment. So they agreed. So he brought in his fellow students and they began sitting down and touching and talking and eye contact. And all of a sudden, those bodies got animated and responsive, okay? So this thing of isolation, no isolation, is really important. Really is important. And again, escalation of those who need it, de-escalation of those who are available to give it. So how do we fill the gap? And how do we fill the gap responsibly? That's really the question we're talking about here and trying to familiarize ourselves with. And for you as counselors, where this becomes important is, now, granted, I have a specialty in this, so I get lots of these kind of, well, not lots. I get many of these kind of cases, proportionally speaking, where people come, call me, come. I just had one 2 weeks ago where one fellow called me and said, he's there in Birmingham. His brother's a professor at a college in another city. He said, my brother's coming to town. We're going Saturday to another town to try to convince my mother to come and live with one of us. He said, we want you to tell us how to do it. Now, we all laughed, but I'm telling you, that's exactly what it was. And I met with those guys for about an hour and a half. And I said, tell me about your mom. Who is she? What kind of person is he? What's her interest? How has she functioned up now? What's her mental stability like at this point? With that information then, I could go back and help them develop an approach to her other than what they've done before. Mom, you gotta quit this and move home. No? So That's where your role is going to come in. And that's where these things are important for you to be aware of them. Here's one of these robotic fellows. This is a cognitive, sort of two-faceted communication through specially developed communication systems, and we'll talk about those in the next slide, and stimulation by engagement, the robot, Carabot, it's German, that's why it has this fancy name, can be caught entertaining assisted living facility residents by playing memory games to keep their minds exercised. Okay? Now I'll go to the next slide and we'll look at the communications part of it. It comes under emotional, but it's still the communication side. The emotional is illustrated by the introduction of robotic pets at the level of the Hasbro toy company. We don't think of a toy company being into senior care, do we? But somebody up the top of that corp said, here's an opportunity. We can do this and we can make money too. And so they develop an artificial dog with a heartbeat, with a coat that feels just like a dog, and with AI, artificial intelligence. And that dog, the AI side of it, begins to track this person to whom it belongs, learns all its patterns, when they get up, when they go to bed, when they eat, when they go to the bathroom, when they walk, all the patterns of life. It takes, by using AI, it programs and patterns, and it lays down a baseline of that person's emotional and behavioral lifestyle. So one day, mom can't get out of bed. And out of bed time comes, and AI picks up on it. And mom didn't go to the bathroom. AI picks up on it. So AI notifies a call center. The call center notifies the daughter or the son or whoever is the caretaker. Go check on mom. She's broken her routine. Yes.
So when you're talking about where it's tracking patterns and doing all those other kinds of things, so is that then going to like a call center who then informs the daughter or the son or whatever?
That's where it ends up. The AI has the intelligence to measure it over against the baseline.
I understand that. It sees that there's something that's off, and so, okay, it alarms.
It alarms the call center. The call center then notifies you, go check on mom. Okay.
It's just that, you know, which the whole thing is on how to dehumanize. Oh, I mean, like, I'm in tears here. I mean, I haven't, it's about to come now because we've been caregiving a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I see these things, and just like you're saying, with that human touch, it's like, how horrible.
Yeah. But let me give you,
I couldn't find the room. So I missed the front end.
That's
right.
Let me give you a current reality from our Sunday school class. Okay? We have a man in our class who was a businessman. Because the circumstance beyond his control, he was forced to sell that business probably 15 years ago now. Took a real beating on it. And took a lot of his retirement money at the same time. So he is now 75, thereabouts. He still works a full shift at Publix. But his wife has Alzheimer's.
Right.
He does not have the money
to
send her out, okay? He doesn't have the money to bring in a caretaker, okay? At this point, it's still possible for him to go work a four-hour shift, have an hour and a half, two-hour lunch, come home, spend some time with her,
right,
get her reoriented, go back and work the second four-hour shift.
And is there not family support?
No.
There's not church support?
No. Well, there's some church support.
Right.
Our class is pretty good about it. But we don't have the capacity for somebody to be there every day.
I understand that.
Okay? So this kind of thing, for him, for this guy, in this set of circumstances, it's not dehumanizing, it becomes humanizing because it allows him to feed her by earning the money, okay? At the same time, it allows him to keep track of her.
No, I
understand your struggle.
We've got a 91-year-old mother-in-law,
yeah,
a blind sister-in-law. I mean, like, I understand this.
No, you want the physical touch. You want the touch, you want the conversation.
But
this is an assist, the stopgap and assist. Now, it's not, doesn't take your place. Now, I'm sure some people are going to use it to take their place. We're going to talk about the ethics of that.
That's why I was asking about the accountability.
Yeah.
Like, who's checking in with this stuff? Now,
we're going to talk about the ethics involved.
That's
a little bit more.
I always tend to jump ahead.
That's all right. Hey, when you're in a place of struggling, hey, I get that in counseling all the time. By the way, there's another lesson for you about counseling. When people are hurting, they tend to go over here before you're ready to go over here, because you've got to know all this before you get there so you can actually help them. Very typical, you know? So, but I appreciate you're asking the question, and I appreciate where you are. My mom and dad lived with us. My dad for almost 12 years, my mom for 5, and then she died. And then we, 3 weeks after mom died, we realized she was really covering for Pop.
Sure.
Yeah? And so within 3 weeks, I had to talk to Papa, going to the attorney and getting power of attorney. And within 6 months, I had to take his car keys. Yeah, so been there, done that.
No,
and my wife would tell you, when we lived in Miami, my wife would tell you, he could get away quicker than a toddler. She was on a first name basis with the police department.
That's just my mother-in-law.
Yeah. So, folks, this is what we're talking about. This is the real practical world we're talking about and what you got to help people with. The robot pet puppy, I already have really kind of talked about this at this point, so I'll go to the next one. The same technology can be equipped with AI monitoring sensory array, capable of learning patterns, an elderly companion, and providing feedback to central location where the notification is given and so forth. We talked about that. For the employed caregiver outside the home, this can be an asset, ethical, or it can be a negligent caregiver and conscience soother, unethical. Okay? So you don't escape that dilemma. It's always going to be there. And believe me, I can tell you from experience, there are times when you're at that point and you make this decision, and then for the next 5 hours, you're kicking yourself for making that decision because you don't feel good about it. So you go back and try to recoup this one. I don't care who you are. If you're taking care of an elderly person, you're gonna run into that dilemma from time to time. How about our friends in the quiz? Well, Honda's Asmo robot and Denslow, produced by CT Asia Robotics and Eloquil, who are just a few of the commercial robots already available. Eloquil is advertised as, quote, proactive artificial intelligence-driven social robot designed to encourage active, engaged lifestyle by suggesting activities and making it simple to connect to loved ones. Where the next two are robotic dogs, yet another product using AI to learn the preferences and the quirks of the user. So, I don't know where you live, but in my neighborhood, we're the exception with this. In our neighborhood, most of our neighbors are 30-somethings to 40-somethings. And so dogs are everywhere. I got two little girls that walk their dogs, and they come by when my neighbor and I, who is also here, sit on the porch sometimes in the late afternoon and chat, and they'll bring Nala by. And Nala is a golden doodle, yeah. And she's only a year old, so she is really active. And I always enjoy it. I love dogs, you know. But we've got people in our neighborhood who have 3 dogs. Yeah? No kids, but 3 dogs. Okay? So dogs in America, dogs are an easy way to engage people.
Yeah? You know the dog's name before you know the person.
Precisely. I don't know this little girl's name, but I know Nala. I know one of them's Emily, but I don't know the other one's name. She's not always with her. Emily's the one bringing Nala. We go to across the street where the HOA puts on a shindig on Friday nights pretty frequently, and there'll be almost as many dogs as there are people. Okay? So it's an easy way for the industry to tap into that, to connect people to AI. So it can be a very useful tool, but it needs to be a tool, doesn't need to be an excuse. Christian perspective, ethics and robotic caregiving. Fascinating information and exciting research that is part of the world that we as biblical counselors and as Christian caregivers will encounter, whether we like it or not, it's here. How are we to view the technology? To what extent can we contribute to our society in the ethical use and further development of robotic care? I'm not going to contribute to robotics because I got a hard time running this thing, yet alone. Okay? But I can contribute to the way we think about using them. Okay? And that's why I wanted to do this seminar, quite honestly. I want to contribute to our people being aware of these things and thinking, how do we help people who are using them, or how do we help people realize you can use them? It's not unethical to use them. It's like any other tool. It's the ethics is in how you use it, what your motivation is, and how you use it. And that's the way it is with this. We must ask the question, given the statistical realities, would it be unethical if we failed to engage in the development and the use of robotics in caring for the aging? If we did like some of our folks did back in the 1950s, they just withdrew into their little conclave because the world was going liberal around them, so they withdrew into an enclave. You know what? All that did was let the world go faster the wrong way. When I grew up, my mom told me, stay away from politics, it's dirty. Well, my mom was wrong. 50%. She was right on the dirty. She was wrong on the stay away. That's where we are. Christians have stayed away to a large extent until recently. Recently, we've got people that are engaging. But generally speaking, we've stayed clear of it. Well, you know what? When you let the bad boys play by themselves, they get better. Okay? So we need to be participants here. I coined a phrase recently, and I like it. We need to adapt to our culture, but not adopt our culture. Yes.
Have you heard of Sherry Turkle?
Pardon me?
Sherry Turkle, have you heard of her? She was a big robotics advocate.
No.
And she was on the front of Wired magazine, but then she ended up writing a book called Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology.
I can't hear you, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of changed her view. She used to take her students to see that. And I saw it at a museum once. It's a seal that you can pet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's a whole other thing where it's not a robot that's helping you. It's a robot that you're showing affection to, but it's not a real living being.
Right.
She had a lot of issues with that, and she's done a TED Talk and written a lot about, that we're in this robotic moment where we delegate important relationships to the most vulnerable parts of life. We have baby monitors, that's okay, because you're still,
But is that okay?
Yeah, for me personally, I wouldn't mind having a robot do some things.
Right.
And even, helping you in the bathroom, it's almost better. You don't have this person standing there waiting. My mother's 97, so
right.
I see the issues that she's facing.
Right.
But you do still want that human interaction.
Absolutely.
But, she would be happy playing bridge with a robot because there's nobody there plays bridge, and she's good at it, right? And
mm-hmm.
She'd be happy if the robot could help her in the bathroom, but she'd still want to see us.
Right.
And have us give her a back rub and have some touch.
Right. And that's what I'm getting at here. You would adapt, but you don't adopt.
Right.
The adopting would be, that takes over, I'm free, I can go do my thing.
Right. Yeah.
Adapting is saying, I can use this fellow here for this purpose to help me help better. Okay. That's the way you have to think about this and help people think about it. Yes.
When you sort of, you've asked us, you know, that question, so how from a influential standpoint, like the decisions that are being made at those particular organizations, or how do we do that? Is that just an individual family? Is it an organization that, am I jumping ahead?
Well, the way I, the extent to way I've thought it through is, it's a family, and then family, when family gets engaged at the nursing home level, then you step in, and you address the ethical part at the nursing home level as well. Now, I don't know of an organization that I would support at this point. It may be my ignorance. I don't know an organization that's actually trying to champion the ethical standard.
Right, but let's say there was a commission on aging. There's a XYZ.
Yep.
You know, and so the thing is, like when you kind of tied in that.
I actually participated in that in 1978.
Okay, so
White House, the White House Conference on Aging.
Okay.
It had met different places around the country, and I was invited to come give testimony because of what I did.
Okay.
So yes, when you have those opportunities and you look for those opportunities, you take those opportunities. But I don't think I'm saying, and I know I'm not saying, go out and form an organization and carry a flag and try to, you know.
No, but what I'm saying is that decisions are being made without our participation.
Right, right.
I mean, and again, in our own family unit, we would do the responsible thing.
Right.
Right, but to have an influence on others, or as you're saying.
And you influence others along the way.
Right, and as a counselor, as you people come in and you're
right.
giving them information, and
right.
yes, even though we want to give them the hope of the gospel, yet, you know, you've got to give them practical care that they're going
right.
to need in that particular situation.
Right. Another example from my Sunday school class. We have a 35-year-old man in my Sunday school who is a quadriplegic from birth. His mother developed a passion for him to be taken care of when she's gone because they don't have the financial capacity to do it. Well, she's led the charge. We've been at it now. I participated some early on. I'm not now. There's a board now, and they're doing it, but I was in on it. On the ethical level early on. They are now at the place where they're ready to purchase a property, they got state support, they're getting the Social Security law changed in order to make it work. Okay? So that's the way you...
Like a grassroots.
Yep, yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Sampling of foundational biblical principles. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's pretty powerful. Okay? Acts chapter 20, verse 35. And everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words of the Lord Jesus himself, and he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Leviticus 19:32, stand up in the presence of the aged, show respect for the elderly, revere your God, I am the Lord. Interesting. Put that at the same level. Revere God, stand up for the elderly. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 4, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first to put their religion into the practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. Psalm 71:9, do not cast me away when I am old. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 2, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, Isaiah 46:4, even to your old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I am he who I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you, and I will rescue you. God gives us the model. 1 Timothy 5:16, but if any woman who is a believer has widows in her care, she should continue to help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those widows who are really in need. A lot of times I find younger counselees particularly, they want help with it. They're professing Christians. They want help with their relationship, or they want help finding a relationship, or they want help with their raising their kids. But they're really not interested in engaging their life in a local assembly. I have somebody in my inner circle, so to speak. He professes to be a believer. He reads the Bible regularly. He can talk theological things. He gave up in church 20 years ago. I don't need that. You know? He doesn't need it because his daddy right now is taking care of everything. Okay? But the day's going to come when his daddy's not going to be here. And he's going to need some help. Whether he wants or not, he's going to need some. And there's not going to be anybody to turn to. So we need to help people stay connected with the local body and contribute to the local body as well as receive from the local body. And these areas, like I just mentioned, these people in our Sunday school class, we've had some others in that class. We've been with this class more than 20 years, and we all started out. Well, I started out in the 60s. They started out when they were in the 50s, most of them. And now we're seeing doom, doom, doom. Listen to your father. Do not despise your mother. She is old. Proverbs 23:22. Set beside this sampling the one another passages of the New Testament and the Old Testament narrative examples. See also the general biblical ethical teachings. Operational ethics. It seems to me that there is no difference in the development of the automobile. We can take the view of the Amish and stay out in the horse and buggy and comply with the law by putting taillights on our buggies and otherwise ignoring advancement. Or we can be like some of my other religious friends, the Mennonites, who use automobiles but paint all the chrome black. No offense here or criticism intended to either group. I have friends on both sides, okay? I'm simply giving you a vivid illustration of options. Most evangelical Christians see automobiles as tools to get a job done. Okay, I think that's what we have to look at these things. They're tools to get a job done. They are not evil or good. They're inanimate. And the way they are used determines their morality. If we choose to drive the automobile 140 miles an hour on the interstate, we are behaving immorally. We are violating the law, endangering the lives of others. If we use the vehicle as it's designed and regulated, it is a tool that enables us to serve the Lord and others effectively and enhance our lives. I think the parallel is the same. The concerns of researchers regarding the robots promoting isolation and freeing the family from actual care personally, interacting are right on target. And we should be concerned for the Christian community to not fall into that trap. On the other side of the coin, if we use technology responsibly, it can help us provide safety and enhance cognitive functioning and communication. It can also enable the nursing home community to provide better care and free up workers for personal interaction by utilizing robots for menial services. This will take training for the workers to use the time to care and not avoid. They can go have another smoke instead of engaging because they have some time. That's not the purpose. The key for secular folks and the key for us is our worldview. Our biblical theological worldview should give us a grid through which we extrude the use of these tools, like all other tools God graciously enables mankind to develop. Is our goal love, care, assistance, mutual benefit, which glorifies God? Or is our goal selfish ambition that seeks self-focused pleasures and escaping personal responsibility? Caring for the aging adults is time-consuming. I can attest to that, and she can attest to it even more than I can. Using robots, just like using a hospital bed or mechanical life support to assist us in caring, is wise. Whoop. Basic questions to facilitate ethical considerations. Are you using the tools in accordance with 1 Corinthians 13, 1-4? Is our motive using these tools focused on the other person first? The designer, our God, created people to be in a relationship. Are we using the tools as a soul in the image of God, connecting to a soul made in the image of God for mutual benefit in a manner that is well-pleasing to our God, the designer? That's a mouthful to say that, but I think it almost has to be said that way to get the coordination. Provoking thoughtfulness, quiz 2. We start out with a quiz, we'll end with a quiz. Would you have an ethical problem using a wheelchair to assist a senior citizen with mobility? And the answer is obviously no. Is giving mechanical dog to a senior to comfort them any different than giving a soft, cuddly, stuffed dog to children to comfort them? No. Is monitoring a senior adult with a mechanical animal any different than a baby monitor in your infant's room? Ultimately, no. You can twist that and say, yeah, well, you're escaping the touch. I know, but I'm just in principle, it's no different. Right.
Like as a first time mom or even a second time mom, that kids will just cry themselves. You know, like it was all those things. So to look in there and just see their eyes closed and they're just kind of wrestling in bed.
Yeah.
Everything was fine. I got a better night's sleep.
Yeah, right, right.
And they would have ones that will tell you when they reach a certain volume.
Oh, yeah.
You can say where the threshold is and the sound. And it won't even flip on the screen for you until that point.
He's got a little one, he knows.
You can set motion in certain rooms. So like when our older daughter is in her bed and she moves in her bed, we don't have to go off. But if she gets out of bed, we can set it so there's certain zones.
Yeah.
You got this pad on the floor when she steps on that wall.
See, you just made my case. You just made my case for using robotics.
Yeah.
It's no different. You don't ignore your child. You're trying to good care of your child to take care of you so you can take better care of your child. It's the same principle.
And we have cameras for my mother-in-law, who's 91 and lives in her own house, and it's a three-story home.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And she gets super angry. I mean, there's just certain things. Because she's a can-do kind of gal, you know, and she was taught, if you do it yourself, you do it. And so, anyway, it's fight or flight. It's just a tough thing. But the cameras help because she may say, I'm going to go walk the 2 miles to, you know, her blind daughter's crossing a major intersection. Yeah. But she may still be in her jammies and she just blows smoke.
Yeah.
So we don't have to drive the 35 miles to go and save her.
What determines your answer? It depends on the motive behind your use. It depends upon the purpose of the users. Is it an attitude of caring or an attitude of convenience, isolation, and self-protection? Now, it may give some of those things at the same time sometimes, but the primary question is it this, for this person's benefit?
Amen.
Methods must always be tested determining ethics. Is there anything inherently unethical in the use of something? Like, hey, I'm going to be political here. It's like a gun. There's nothing inanimately wrong with a gun. It's what the person does with it. That principle runs through everything. Okay? Is the motive wholesome? Is the attitude one of mutual respect and value? Okay? Ethics rooted in theology. Biblical ethical framework is constant. It doesn't change. The challenges must be evaluated by the constant. The yield will be consistency. The product will be a clear conscience, glory to God, a witness to the world. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you a quick story. It has nothing to do with robotics, but it kind of pulls all this together in reality, the kind of decision you have to make. Because it had a little bit of ethical edge on it. My dad was a walker. As I said, he could get out of the house and gone before she ever knew it. And she was home all the time with him. I got to the place where my dad had an apartment adjacent to our house, you know, all connected. So I took all these shoes and put them on my side of the house. And I thought that would keep him from walking. No! So one day a policeman pulled in my driveway. If you're familiar with Miami and US 1 in Miami, you know what that's like. Okay? Well, he had walked from my house, crossed US 1 all the way to the bay. And somebody called the cops, and a young cop, maybe 25, brought him home. Well, I was out in the yard when he brought him home, and they pulled him and popped a smile from ear to ear. He's got to ride a cop car. He gets out and he starts walking toward me. He's barefooted. And I see the cop get out and start walking toward me, and he is not a happy camper. And I thought, uh-oh, we got an elder abuse case on our hands here. So I started walking toward the cop. And when I got to him, I put my hand out and said, thank you for bringing my dad home. I said, I thought maybe by putting his shoes in my side of the house where they weren't quite so accessible, we could curtail this walking. I said, because I don't want to lock him in his apartment like a prison. At that point, the cop smiled. Do you hear the ethical piece in there? Okay? And that's what the cop was looking at. He was looking at the ethical piece. What was my dad's name? You're looking at it.
His first name. Oh, his first name. Okay.
Yeah. He was.
So I'll just call him Shoeless Howard as my illustration.
Yeah. He was Howard. Better known as Harvey.
Okay.
That's what he was known
by.
I
like that better. Shoeless Harvey.
Yeah, he was Harvey. Yeah.
Any blisters?
Or in the family, Pop-Pop. In the family, he was Pop-Pop. Yeah.
Any blisters from all that walking? Barefoot?
Honestly, I don't remember him having blisters because his feet were pretty. His feet were pretty tough because he walked barefoot a lot.
He could walk on the grass.
Yeah. And you know what? He was the kind, if he got a blister, he got a blister. Didn't matter. No. He just keep on going. No. He was a tough old bird.
When I lived in Miami, we went barefoot everywhere.
No, I was going to say, speaking of ethical and rough decisions, we made a move from Pennsylvania to Atlanta. And Mom Eirich was gone, and we had Pop-Pop. But we were in a situation where we had to get a separate apartment because we were building a house, and we were in a townhouse, but we had to get a separate one.
For him.
You know, well, anyway, and so I ran back and forth, you know, trying to keep track. But one day, he got away. Going down Highway 41 in Atlanta.
That's a four lane highway.
Yeah, it's four lane. Anyway, call, a man says, I think this is your father. We found him from my, we were going down the road and took note that it just didn't look right. Don't worry about it. We're going to bring him home. I'm like, okay. So he said, we'll be there in a few minutes. So we are come outside, or standing outside waiting for this guy to bring him home. A black stretch limo pulls up in front of our house.
And Pop gets out, big smile.
Police car and stretch limo.
So because the guy, the limo driver, they say, you know, and whatever, we're like, now that's coming home inside.
Well, the gentleman told me his father had just died of Alzheimer's.
Did your dad have dementia or Alzheimer's?
Oh yeah. Okay. This guy's dad had just died, so he recognized what was going on, you know. And I don't know what he did. He never told me what he did, but whatever he did, he was way up there, because this was back in the late 70s. He already had a car phone.
Oh yeah.
So he was way up there someplace, but he just saw Pop and brought him home. Anyway, what?
The movie Robot and Frank. You should watch it. It's about a father.
No, I haven't seen that one.
He has a robot like this. Only he was a cat burglar in his previous life. So he gets the robot to help him continue to do this. But it's really, it kind of addresses some of these issues, because the son has to then deal with the fact that his father out of having the robot has to, like, you know, the moral issue of how he programmed.
Yeah. It was a good movie, but it, you know,
before you leave, come up here and give me the book you referred to, because I'm not familiar with it. Please.
I was thinking, we had a lady in our church a few years back that her husband had progressing Alzheimer's and got to the point where he couldn't speak and really even recognize her. And she put him in a nursing home because she couldn't care for him anymore.
Right.
And there's an ethics even in a nursing home about that element.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember is what you're talking about here. She demonstrated God's love constantly by visiting him on a regular basis. And although he could never communicate to her, we could see God's love by her visiting constantly. And so there's people in our church that go visit him. He loved music, and you couldn't get him to respond to anything, but she gave him this little tiny little kid's piano. And he could play that thing, and he'd respond to it. She left the hymnal in his drawer, and if he pulled that thing out and start singing, usually by the fourth verse, he would start crying because he wanted to be with the Lord. And that was always a verse always talks about that.
Yeah.
And so I think that you're right. I think that the personal element is so important with caring for those that we don't. You start to think, why is this person here? How can they serve me?
They're serving you.
But that's wrong. That's wrong thinking.
Yeah.
We're here to serve God.
Yeah.
And if we love this person and we demonstrate that love, what happens is those people, even in those nursing homes, would see that lady going everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They would see these people going and sing songs with them. Yeah. And what would they say? Wow, they love him greatly. Why? And they start to ask those questions.
Right.
So I think that
there's a mutuality to that. You're serving God. You're serving the elder. The elder, many times, is serving you because they're pushing your sanctification.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One other thing, and then I'll end because we're running out of time. Her daddy died of Parkinson's. From August till Thanksgiving, she left every Sunday after church, drove 3 hours to Atlanta, helped her mother take care for her dad, through Thursday when her brother came off the road. He was a traveling salesman. Then she came home and spent the weekend with me. She did from August till Thanksgiving, and then we had to put him in a nursing home. And God wonderfully opened a nursing home not more than about 5 minutes from where he lived. And they lived kind of out in the country, but one more about 5 minutes away. Her mother got up every morning, went to the nursing home, spent the day with him at the nursing home, every day. And at one point, she was getting ready to leave, and Mama came out on the back porch, and Pam said to her, Mama, how are you doing? And her mama said, I'm fine. Pam said, no, Mama, how are you doing? And Mama said, I'm fine. this is the assignment God has given me, and I'm okay with it.
And that's where we have to enter in, because that is their assignment. But statistically, caregivers often go before the person requiring care, because they pour themselves out or don't have the support of other family members or a solid church, you know, like I said, whether it's a Sunday school class or the pastors who come. So that's, it's that overall corporate, you know, oversight on the people, because it's just hard.
No doubt about it.
And emotionally, Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, folks. Pam. Get that book from name from her.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.